Haven't done a good woo in a while, Scott, but we're back with another Sports Bar podcast in person, thanks to me being finally rested up from my New Orleans trip.
Adventure?
I guess you could call it. It wasn't really a trip.
August was a month for us, Alex. Collectively, we both aged probably another year in the month of August, but it's okay because it's September now and we're back and here we are on the couch and we're ready to break it down again. And we needed to be in top form this past weekend because, wow, was there a lot of stuff.
Cold beers and a lot of football. Of course, NFL week one is in the books and finally back. A lot to get to today, literally, because we were just breaking it down. Half of it was recorded on accident, but we have so much to talk about. I don't know how we're going to fit it in. I mean, we're going to have to really just, you're going to have to slap me a couple times because there is so much college football to get to. We had upsets galore this weekend, and it was so much fun for a slate that a lot of people immediately looked at and said, it's going to be garbage. And I knew right away that means buckle up. It's going to be a wild weekend. And then Saturday concludes with a couple upsets still, but then we have Sunday and we have multiple overtime games in the NFL. And I got
to
be honest.
A great witching hour to start things off too. Man,
if you weren't watching Red Zone, there was almost no other way to watch that Sunday. But I was sitting there on the couch watching Red Zone and I was like, I need to take notes or something. My mind's not fast enough for this yet.
We're going
to
get you a legal pad so you can.
I felt so rusty watching NFL. I felt very, very rusty. So I'm glad to shake off the rust and let's hop right into it, man.
Let's do it. Let's start with the hometown team, Jacksonville Jaguars. They open things up 0-1. Surprising in, or at least
it's a tradition.
It's a tradition. That's the best way to put it.
That's what we do.
We're used to it around these parts, but the progress to get there was a little bit different than we've seen. Remember last year, a woeful Texans team just thoroughly trounced the Jaguars in Houston. Year before that, Jags actually won the only game they won all year against the Colts, and then it was all downhill from there. But Jacksonville Jaguars haven't had a ton of success, or I think they're actually 500 all time now in opening weekends, but especially as of late, haven't had a ton of success. And this was sort of a tale. It was almost a three-part game on Sunday, right? A bad, unfulfilling first half, a really good switch coming out of the locker room.
Yeah, first half, you looked at it and said, same old, same old.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, because it's not what we were expecting in the preseason, but I couldn't agree more. First half was, oh boy, this again.
But then things turned. Coming out of the locker room, it was clear that they made adjustments and the offense moved the ball more efficiently. The defense figured some things out, forced a handful of punts, forced a handful of turnovers, and it looked like Jags are going to win the game. And then they picked the worst time of the game to have two of their most unfulfilling drives and gave up two long touchdown drives to the Commanders and Carson Wentz, who just everybody in Washington got to ride the true Carson Wentz experience on Sunday. But, you know, the main question coming out of this one, right, is this just a same old Jags team, not good enough, not crisp enough, not well coached enough, or was there enough positive moments coming out of this one where you feel like, you know, maybe this team has a brighter future ahead of it, at least more than a 1 or 2 win season.
It's a twofold answer for me because I actually don't view the Commanders that high. I think they're a very average team, middle of the road. And that is going to point to me being a little disappointed that the Jags couldn't beat them. I think the Jags had every opportunity to, as we saw, didn't take advantage of it. But this team isn't used to winning. No. So they don't know how to win. They can't literally put their foot on someone's neck when they're down because they don't know how to do it. They haven't done it. I thought Lawrence looked pretty bad. He didn't look good. ETN had some
moments.
Drops. Sure, he was explosive, but that drop for a touchdown, I mean, that was a walk-in.
Yeah, that was the one real – I thought he played really well other than that play. That was a very obviously
– monumental play.
Hurtful play for the offense and not being able to bounce back. The offense moves the ball.
Yep.
I mean, they moved the ball with consistency throughout the course of the day pretty well, all things considered. They just still have trouble when they get in that area where the field closes up and you're inside the 20s.
So part two of the answer is that they did look coached. They did look in sync, even when there were some errors, but those were player errors. It didn't necessarily seem overwhelmingly coaching errors. Like, Peterson has it going in the right direction is how I felt after that game. I don't think anyone expects the Jags to even have a winning season this year.
Mm-hmm.
Some people had him as a dark horse to maybe sneak into a wild card. But given my expectations for him is let's look better than we did last year. And they did. I mean, they were not an Urban Meyer coach team. Urban Meyer loses that game by 25.
Oh, they would have never bounced back after the half. Like, it would have been over. And then Washington would have added a couple more scores in the second half. And maybe the Jags get a garbage time one. Yeah. Yeah. Undoubtedly there were things that were better. There's still a lot of work to be done. And one thing I've heard said a little bit by people that have played the position, talking about offensive line play, because collectively across the NFL, there are a lot of red mark or question marks when it came to red flags is the term I was looking for when it came to O-line play. And we're probably just at a point right now where the defense is going to be a little ahead of the offense in that regard, as especially some retooled offensive lines get used to playing alongside each other, having not played a ton in the preseason. I don't think people think about enough the gap between the end of the preseason and the regular season now. Like, nobody, the starters don't play in the last game of the preseason, no matter who it is. And then you take like an extra like week and a half. Like, so you go like two and a half weeks almost, 2 weeks plus without playing in a game. Like, that's a big, layoff, you know, to come in and just be crisp all the time. And so I'm really hoping that the offensive line, which was okay, is one that, like, as they continue to gel and hopefully stay healthy, gets better throughout the course of the season. Because Trevor Lawrence is, it's apparent, he is not overly comfortable back there at a lot of times. He looked good when he was able to sit and make reads comfortably, but there are too many times where he was bailing out or trying to move around in a collapsing pocket and was skittish.
Hopefully that doesn't mean they scarred him as a rookie.
Yeah.
Because people talk about that with
David Carr.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was hit more than any QB in the history of the NFL. So yeah, he was mentally scarred. A little beer spillage. It always happens.
It was
fuller than I anticipated.
No, we need a straw in there for you. Yeah. Well, that's okay. Scott, you don't.
I'm going to mop it up here.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just lick it off. You're good.
Podcasting is a visual medium.
And well, this is part of our gig is drinking beer on a couch. So you definitely did that. You spilled a little beer.
Yeah.
But I don't even know where I was.
You were talking about Trevor Lawrence being scarred.
Oh, scarred. Yeah. I mean, all the other teams in the NFL, when they draft a quarterback early and it's a bad situation, That's the narrative. That's what everyone points to is, well, do you force him in there and maybe mess with his psyche?
Yeah.
What if Lawrence is this generational talent that you just don't get it out of him? You never squeeze the grape.
We're hearing more of that kind of conversation the last 2 days than we have heard at any time before. I will say that. And I mean, it's start one of his second year in the NFL. He's
way too early to label
22.
I mean, way too label early to label it.
I would. And I know Doug Peterson said that they liked the play calling and they felt good about it. And, you know, I don't know what he's going to go up there and say. I take some of this stuff with a grain of salt with media availability and coaches anyway, who feel like everybody's out to get them. But, you know, it's one of those where, man, if they just focused a little more on the running game, like, I don't want to run it three quarters of the time, but just taking a little bit of a load off with what I thought was pretty good performance by the running backs, two of them. And it helps your own line too.
Robinson looked good again.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't touch it much, but.
I mean, when he touched it, he was effective. Yeah. And O-lines, they'll tell you they'd rather run block than pass block every day of the week. And it helps if you can keep things off balance, if, you know, just a little bit of the running to keep the respect and the little bit of the, hey, keep them honest approach going.
Yeah,
there.
On their toes. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, my biggest takeaway is that defensive secondary is terrible. They got a lot of work to do before they're good.
Yep.
I'm not saying Tyson Campbell won't eventually be good, but they got toasted. It's a good receiving core.
Yeah.
But they got toasted.
A pretty good receiving core. I thought Shaq Griffin actually played quite well. I mean, he was matched up one-on-one with Terry McLaurin the whole day, and we didn't hear much out of Terry McLaurin. I mean, he got beat once.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very impactful beat.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's one of those deals. It's like, all right, hey, I played good 99% of the time, and I played bad 1%, but it was a real bad 1%.
Yeah.
And Campbell was, you know, a lot of people have brought up that touchdown he gave up at the end. And
to Samuel.
Yeah. And everybody's like, why didn't you just knock it down? And I was like, man, that's so easier said than done. You're turning your head back, trying to locate the football. You rake for it and you grab arms. And then like, I believe that the best thing to do is like try and get in the way and bother him and hope he drops it and don't commit the PI there. Cause PI puts him down at the 1 yard line with the time to run more time off the clock before scoring a touchdown and giving your offense even less time to work with when it comes. I don't think say that was running through his head, but like.
That'd be a lot to calculate.
Yeah. But like you can't, if you can't locate the football, then you can't just blindly reach and grab. I mean, and he didn't, and he was right there with him. And it was a great catch.
It was a really good catch. Contested.
It was
for
a great
sure.
ball and a great catch. I mean, he was right in his hip pocket and he didn't interfere. And like, that's all you're asking for.
So overall, I gave you a negative and I gave you a positive. I'm more positive out of this than I am negative. They had the game won at the end. And they went down to the red zone twice and had nothing to show for it.
Right, yeah. I mean
they dominated that game. I feel good about it. And this week will be very interesting because the Colts are bouncing back, wanting to bounce back after tying with the Houston Texans, but having a killer second half, couldn't get it done in overtime. So Jags get Colts this weekend, neither with a win. I think this is going to be a huge, huge game for the Jags to turn it around and maybe get a little momentum.
Yeah, Jags have been good against the Colts at home, especially over the last several years. And you hope that that carries over and maybe being back home in front of some home fans and being comfortable, they'll perform. I mean, yeah, both teams have a lot to play for this week. That's for sure. We like to bring up our game, our 2-0 or 0-2, you know, who do you feel best about? Who do you feel worse about? I'm sure we'll bring that back next week, but it's both of those teams staring 0-2 in the face if they don't find a way to clean some things up. And I hope
forgot we did that last year. Yeah. Did we do it at 2 or 3?
I think we did. Maybe we did it at 3. I don't know. I'll have to,
I can't remember. I like that. Yeah. Write that down. Let's bring it back.
We'll make a note.
All in.
What else? Game of the week. What stood out to you as far as games in the NFL that were, you know, standout type moments that caught your eye?
I'm telling you, there were so many. It's really hard for me to choose just because Houston and Indy looked like a slow game. Didn't really watch much of it. Red zone didn't flip to it much, but they go to overtime. Indianapolis storms all the way back.
Yeah, they were getting crushed.
They were getting dominated.
Similar to the Falcons.
They were
Saints
down
game.
16 points. So Saints-Falcons was a great game. That came down to a game-winning field goal. And then, obviously, my Steelers and Browns.
Bengals, yes.
I mean, Bengals, yeah. That was.
Though the Browns and Panthers was another one.
Browns and Panthers came down to it. So it's really hard for me to pick one. Can I just pick the Steelers?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'll pick the Steelers because that was the one I was so locked in on. For obvious reasons, but 5 turnovers on Joe Burrow, 4 6, but only got 5 of them. He fumbled and they recovered one of them. One of the wildest endings that, did you see the ending? Or at least the highlights?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw it when it happened as they were kind of going live. I had the 2 TV set up on Sunday. So red zone rolling on one of them. And
you go down, you have Evan McPherson, yeah. One of the best kickers in the NFL.
Well, they show they make a mention. They're like backup long snapper. And I had just seen on Twitter that he had a bicep injury. The starting long snapper did. And I was like, man, as a former specialist, the long snapper, I mean, very, very important to the process.
That's where
he
starts.
And he was slow on the snap.
He was slow. It threw off the timing. Everything was messed up. So you get an extra point block to send it to overtime. You get a missed field goal by the Bengals in overtime. Then the Steelers go down and miss a field goal to win.
Boswell's floater that I thought was no good.
No, that was
definitely good. And then it banged off the post.
So two thoughts on that one. That was the most knuckleball.
It was
knuckleballer
a knuckle. I was about to
I've
say it was floating like a butterfly.
Tim Wakefield probably had wet pants after watching that. He was like, oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It went.
It was dancing.
10 yards right, 10 yards left. And then once it straightened out, I've also never. So this is part two of it. I've never seen a ball square up on the post that perfectly.
We saw a couple of.
It wasn't like he nicked it. It was loud. I mean, yeah. I felt like I heard it in real life.
Yeah. All
I felt like
here.
I was there. Yeah. In Jacksonville, all the way from Cincinnati. So that's a game that caught my eye. I cannot believe what I saw as far as the Steelers causing that many turnovers defensively on Joe Burrow.
Plus five in the turnover margin, and the Bengals had a chance. And I mean, don't forget,
is god awful.
I mean, don't forget that like the Bengals screwed themselves out of a touchdown by rushing to the line and not challenging the Ja'Marr Chase earlier touchdown in which he was very clearly had broken the plane. His foot was on
those
the goal.
Refs in that game were so bad though. The Bengals at the very end scored a touchdown on a penalty that was given to him because Minka Fitzpatrick played football. Did you see it?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, he came over and hit the guy in the middle. On the guy. And I didn't think it was anything.
It was
unnecessary.
It's an unbelievable
NFL unnecessary roughness has almost gotten equal to the college football
targeting. Yeah. I mean, it was all bang bang. It was trying to break up a pass that with the game on the line. How do you make that call?
I don't know.
You got to hold the flag there.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those games where it's like, does either of these teams really want to win the game? And, you know, I thought it should have ended in a tie. I thought that would have been the most diplomatic thing, similar to the Colts-Texans game. I thought we were going to get two ties for the first time since the 70s or whatever it was, and it would have been very, very appropriate. But when, you know, the Steelers squeak one out, Boswell hits the second one in OT, and there you go. I mean, I don't know. I still feel better about Cincinnati than I do Pittsburgh coming out of it because
TJ Watt, Harris, injuries there.
Can I speak to that real quick? TJ Watt walks off the field, says, "I tore my pec. I tore it." Like clear as day, you can read his lips.
Yep.
And then like an hour later, they do a breaking news thing, and they're like, "Per this NFL insider, reports are that TJ Watt has broken his pec." I was like, I could have tweeted that.
Yeah.
Would I have gotten the scoop? Like The guy himself reported that he tore his pec. Now, granted, I know they have to go do the medical thing or whatever, but like, why is somebody getting credit for anyone on their couch could have read that one? There's no news to be broken there. I just thought that was absurd.
I heard him shaking his head. I mean, I guess I didn't hear him. I read his lips.
Yeah.
But same thing.
Yeah, walks out the field. Just like, I tore it. I tore my pec.
I felt like I saw him say, I tore everything. Tore everything. Like he was shaking his head.
Yeah.
Walked straight to the locker room. Didn't even go to the tent.
Yeah, it's a shame because like, you hate to see great players.
Oh, he's
week one especially.
Pretty naturally great.
Go out with injuries, and he was so dominant in that game too. So I mean, the Steelers, whose offense was not particularly good on the day, can't run the football.
That's
lose one of their best
very
players.
Very nicely.
Well, lose their best player. Excuse me, not one of their best players. Their best player, and maybe the best defensive player in the league. Whereas the Bengals, it's like, okay, they're breaking in a new O-line that didn't play one snap together in the preseason or whatever. Joe Burrow's still coming back from the appendix. They turned the ball over five times, and they still almost won the game. And they were met without their long snapper. So you almost have to feel better as a Bengals fan being 0-1 today.
Without their long snapper. I love how that – I mean, you're right because it did throw off the timing.
Yeah, they may have to sign somebody. But
it's funny. Like, picture anyone being like, oh, man, we're
out.
Well,
it's just –
our long snapper's out today. We're screwed.
It's an important one. Look at what happened with the Chiefs and the kicker. You know, Butker going out. They kind of figured it out.
What happened to Butker?
Oh, he rolled his ankle on a kickoff. It was kind of gross.
Because I saw him out there the whole time.
He just stepped funny, planted funny, and rolled his ankle on a kickoff. And then went out there and drilled like a 50-something yarder off one step, which is insane to me as a guy who just wishes I had that type of leg strength. I wouldn't be sitting here on this couch next to you. That's for sure.
No,
I'd still
you
be
would just after playing in the game, you'd fly here and we'd record. It's Tuesday. You'd fly home. Yeah.
This would be part of my gig.
I'd we'd have so many more listeners.
Yeah. Yes, we would. It'd be like
very popular.
It'd be like mini Pat McAfee show or something without all the craziness and the yelling or less of the yelling, I guess.
Yeah.
You yell a little bit, but
it'd be good. I yell every now and then.
This is where we're at, though, right? Like week one NFL, records mean very little. 1-0, 0-1. It's really kind of the vibes coming out of the game that determine how you feel a little bit more.
Yeah, we do the overreaction with college football. I mean, this is overreaction Monday or Tuesday in this matter for NFL because this weekend is your first real look at these teams. I mean, I have a couple I can just fire off.
Yeah, rapid fire them here for me.
All right. Cardinals stink.
Okay.
I'm going to actually screw the overreactions. I'll tell you who stinks. The Cardinals stink. Russell Wilson stinks. Geno Smith's good. What the hell? Did you watch any of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watched
Geno
the
Smith
first three
now
quarters.
With the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah. I only say that. I know
his first 13 passes.
most of our listeners say that. I just know my dad will probably listen and be like, Geno Smith, who the hell is that?
Be like, West Virginia's
quarterback from West Virginia. Come on, man.
September Heisman, like the poster child of the September Heisman.
People were tanking for Geno at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll fire those off. Falcons surprised me. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay, that's what you got.
Off the top, off the cusp.
Yeah, yeah, I think.
The Wilson thing, though, I'm serious. I think he stinks. For real, for real.
That was just an interesting game.
They have weapons everywhere, Scott.
He still does that thing where he like runs around back there.
Well, he can't sit in the pocket.
And, like, yeah, he now granted, it might be because he's like 5'2", but the whole like that is one of his assets. His greatest asset, maybe his worst negative feature as well.
He used to be able to move around enough to hit guys. Now it doesn't feel like he's able to move around enough to do that.
The Judy touchdown, he underthrew it too.
Oh,
Judy
it was in the air forever.
And I know that's kind of his calling card.
It wasn't a duck, but it was, there was just so much air on it.
But like Judy made a hero play to turn that into a touchdown when it should have been a layup.
Oh, easily. But, yeah.
Yeah. For my game, of the week that stood out to me, it was what occurred with the Chargers and the Raiders, because I think I said it on the pod last week. Whatever happens with the AFC West this year, especially when they match up against each other, is going to be must-watch television. It's top to bottom, certainly on paper, the most competitive division in the NFL. And we got our first sampling of it. And I think people were a little unsurprised, even though it hurts your pick of a team to watch for the playoffs
the Raiders,
but Chargers looked really good. And
well, they have the pieces and have always had the pieces. So it was actually,
they're actually kind of putting it together.
I felt like it was a relief to say, okay, you're not wasting all these guys.
Right.
And I don't need them to win a Super Bowl. And frankly, I could give a damn about the Chargers. But when you have a collection of talent like that, I do want to see you be a good team. Mm-hmm. Go challenge, go for it.
Yeah.
And this weekend, this Thursday, maybe by the time you're listening to this as a listener, you know they're playing this Thursday, the Chiefs.
Chiefs, yeah. I was going to say, right now, the AFC West, one week in, seems like there's a pretty clear delineation between the top two, the Chiefs and the Chargers, and the next two, which are the Raiders and the Broncos.
Which is fun for us to say after one week. All offseason, I think all of us, and that includes anyone, was saying that whole division's a toss-up. And now we're like, nope, it's between two teams.
But the Chiefs looked like arguably the best team in football. There's a couple teams probably that could vie for that as well. I mean, the Vikings looked really, really good on Sunday.
They did.
But the Chiefs looked like they were a team that it was almost like old school Patriots type thing, where it's like, and they're sort of in that realm, right? Where the Chiefs aren't new anymore. Like, we know they've been around. It's Andy Reid, it's Patrick Mahomes. They lost some pieces. They didn't win the Super Bowl last year, lost in the AFC title game. Is there window passing? Are they going to be the same without Tyreek Hill? And then they just go out there and absolutely throttle a playoff team from last year, start to finish, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it's almost like they sat there all offseason. They're like, you don't think we're the best QB head coach tandem in the NFL? Okay, well, we'll just show you exactly what this looks like.
He was slinging it all over the lot. I mean, 5 TDs. He clearly didn't take a step back without Tyreek Hill. If anything, got better from what I listened to.
The distribution was everywhere.
Oh, it was all over the field, and he still has weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think they're cream of the crop right now. I mean, they look like it. Obviously, the Bills are top dog. Everyone's odds on favorite.
Sure.
But the Chiefs aren't going anywhere. That might be a rematch in the AFC.
If that ends up being an AFC title game, we're blessed, because that's going to be unbelievable football to watch, no doubt about it. And I hope you got Prime dialed up for Thursday night this week.
I'm ready to go. All right, I got it. I know you keep reminding me and the commercials that were on last Thursday.
It's PSA for
everybody.
It's
a really good game. You better have Amazon Prime.
That's huge. Anything else from the NFL Week 1 that stood out to you before we pivot to college?
Bucks look good, man. Julio Jones with Mike Gett. You didn't think so?
Did they look good or the Cowboys look bad?
I guess time will tell.
Yeah. I mean, Micah Parsons is one of the scariest defensive players
he's so good
in the league. Like, whole league. He was just a Tom Brady does that, like, he knows how to take a sack without getting injured type thing, but he couldn't even get into his turtle position fast enough on some of those where Micah was coming in. You know, he's coming off the edge, he's coming up the middle, and obviously there's concerns about the Buccaneers offensive line coming into the year anyway, and that may have held true if the Cowboys offense hadn't just been hot garbage. Though maybe that says more about the Bucs defense and their ability after giving up points on the first drive of the game to not give up points the rest of the game. And maybe they'll be, I mean, remember their Super Bowl year, the defense was really outside of whenever they played the Saints in the regular season, the defense was really the kind of the, their, what they rode on and did a great job. And, you know, that defense retooled a little bit, but maybe with some young pieces ready to lead that team again.
They're young, they're fast, they're athletic, and they're definitely loaded. The O-line's the only question for them. So we'll see what happens. Tell me real quick, you mentioned mm-hmm. this earlier, but I want you to sell me on the Minnesota Vikings. Because why do I not believe in them? But man, they
looked Kirk good. Cousins. It's because of Kirk Cousins.
But they looked really good.
And I think it's the fact that they have an offensive head coach in that could probably get the most out of what is inarguably a talented offense.
I mean,
maybe the best receiver in football and Justin Jefferson.
They've Irv got Smith at tight end. Dalvin Cook,
if he stays healthy, is one of the better running backs and has been since he was a freshman at Florida State. Yeah. Just a dynamic ball carrier, and it makes you feel like, I don't think they're like a Super Bowl type team, but they may be the best team in the North at this point in time. I mean, they're certainly the best team in the North today as we sit here and talk one game in.
Well, I'm excited to see what the Packers do with Lazard back, because I guess eager is a better word, because not excited is not the word, because they were anything but exciting on Sunday.
And the Packers got absolutely lambasted on opening weekend last year, too. Remember, it was here in Jacksonville, and they played the Saints, and the Saints are like, we're going to the Super Bowl, and the Packers...
Jameis, baby.
Packers looked miserable, and, you know, who ended up in the NFC title game? It was not the Saints, it was the Packers, and, you know, they didn't end up going. George Springer hitting a home run, rooting for the Blue Jays because hopefully the Rays keep losing, which will help my Orioles out in the playoff. And that was talking baseball. So it's granted, they're a veteran team. They've got Aaron Rodgers. They've got Matt LaFleur. They'll figure some things out. Their defense is better than they played on Sunday. They'll figure some things out, but it's not a, those that may have taken a future on them winning the Super Bowl might be sweating a little bit today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would be. Aaron Rodgers looked lost.
He almost looked like he wanted to be lost.
Yeah.
Didn't he kind of, like, that first pass that got dropped, he was just like, see, I told you guys you didn't help me out. So
yeah.
Guess we're going to lose. Sorry. Whatever.
He definitely is a guy like that.
Yeah, like, I'm going to do this on purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Like, why would I try? Y'all didn't help me out, so I'm not going to try today.
It's like, this game's over. Yeah. I don't have anybody to catch the ball. Whatever. Haircut's terrible, too. What is he trying to do? I don't get it.
That look is so... We don't have any Miami listeners, do we? It's just so Miami, isn't it?
Yeah, but like...
He's a skinhead on the side. He's got the super long, slicked, weird hair that comes over the baldness.
They call it the...
Is there a look for it? Is there a name for it?
The one where you kind of do the really short buzz on the side and the longer hair on the top, like affectionately or maybe not affectionately known as the boy haircut. But I don't know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what he's going for. Or
damn, when I go get my haircut, I say, well, actually, I don't say anything now because I go to the same lady for 5 years, but shorter on the sides.
Yeah, I think we all do that because you have to taper your hair. But but you're not going like one on the sides keep it long so I can gel it on top.
Yeah,
he's
got like almost. If I picture, maybe this may be crazy. It's like, have you ever seen a shark that has a dorsal fin that just like has no cartilage in it?
Yeah,
and just flops. So actually, it's a whale. I think there's some kind of whale disease where their top fin just flops over. That's what his hair looked like. Just a whale.
And the headband thing doesn't help either.
I think it's called the whale fin.
Yeah.
Something tells me that he got that haircut just so he could wear that headband.
He needs to. I think he wore one last year too, and his hair was long, but I can't remember.
Yeah, but that would look cool.
Yeah. It looked better.
Does Keith like A-Rod?
He acknowledges that he is the quarterback that nobody else likes, but he's his quarterback. It's one of those deals where it's like, he's your guy, so you had to stick up.
I know. I mean, he thinks he's the best from the last time he was on this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's the similar to the fact that, like, you rooted for Ben Roethlisberger for years, and, like, people didn't like Ben Roethlisberger.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, nobody was, like, cheering for Ben Roethlisberger outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those things. Aaron Rodgers, different vibes, but similar situation. Yeah. Yeah, like Ben Roethlisberger's not going to like speak at the
he's not winning the Walter the Payton.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not gonna
and
have
neither
that
is A-Rod.
No. He doesn't want to. He doesn't want to. All right, shall we head over to the college football world?
Yeah, I would love to.
I've got a tweet for you to start things off.
What a great Saturday it was.
We're going to bring back our recurring Cold as Ice segment and remind you that the Sports Bar Podcast is presented by Ice Mule Coolers, and you can use the promo code SPORTSBAR15 at checkout, 15% off your purchase. It's college football season. It's NFL season. It's football season in general. You're going to be going over to friends' houses to watch games, and you're going to want a way to transport your drinks. Maybe you're sitting out on the back patio, and you're like, I can't walk to the fridge every single time. Why not get an Ice Mule Cooler? And that way you can keep the drinks cold the whole time. Hopefully, we're headed for better weather here in Florida here soon, Alex, so we can sit out the back porch and watch some games and not have to seek out AC everywhere, or more accurately, seek out just dry quarters to avoid all the rain.
Yeah.
We're living in a rainforest these days. But, hey, get your Ice Mule Cooler, and you'll be able to celebrate football season in style. Sports Bar 15 at checkout for 15% off. All right. This isn't even totally an accurate tweet because it was tweeted out like evening on Saturday by Pat Forty, now of Sports Illustrated, but it still applies in this time. He tweeted Power 2 update. So Power 2 being the SEC and the Big Ten now, right? That's the entire narrative we heard in the offseason, how the entire sport is just becoming Big Ten SEC.
I love that.
Wisconsin. Home loss to Washington State. They scored 14 points. Iowa, home loss to Iowa State, scored 7 points. Northwestern, home loss to Duke. Texas A&M, home loss to Appalachian State, scored 14 points. Alabama, squeaks one out. Tennessee, squeaked one out at Pitt. That was just the early update on things. And of course, there were a couple other examples. How about Nebraska losing to Georgia Southern, and then Scott Frost being fired sequentially on Sunday. It was one of those days, Alex, in which we saw results that made you realize that, like, you know, college football, this is why they play the games, right? This is why it's not all about how much money your TV contract is or how many 5 stars you can get in a given class. You can sign the number one class in the country and lose to a small school from Boone, North Carolina. I mean, that's just how it goes. It's beautiful.
That Texas A&M loss was mind-boggling because they do have maybe the most talented roster in the SEC right now outside of Georgia, maybe even over Bama, just because of how many 5 stars they've loaded up there. I love that he does that, though. The Power 2 update.
Power 2, yeah.
Oh, I love that. It's a good update, too, because you think about the differential in play, per se, when you're in the offseason, and you look at their conference and how much money they make. Duke goes in there of the pride of the ACC. Our basketball blue blood goes in there and beats Northwestern, who
already beat
is coming off Nebraska. Coming off a big win against Nebraska, who now has fired their coach.
Yeah, it was one of those type days. All right, do you need to make a statement on Jimbo Fisher and where he stands?
Yeah, yeah. No, I wanted to bring this up. I'm glad you said that. And I know by now people know this stat, but it blows my mind and actually frustrates me a little bit, almost to where when I read this stat, it makes me want to root against him more than I kind of already do.
All right.
But he has one less win than Kevin Sumlin when they
fired. I saw that. Yep. I saw that this
and
week.
He's recruiting like crazy. I mean, when is it go? So let me ask, what is the line that has to be crossed for him to get fired there? Because money's not an issue. He has a guaranteed contract. So that buyout is ginormous, but they have all the money in the world, and that's why he went there. They just lost to App State at home.
Yeah, I will say before, I'm not putting Jimbo Fisher on the hot seat here. There's going to have to be a lot more that transpires before I am willing to say that. What we have learned is that in the last, if we've learned anything in the last 2 to 3 years, is that teams, number one, will make moves whenever they feel appropriate. Number two, teams generally make moves when they have in mind a whale to go get. Like Texas A&M isn't firing Jimbo. Like they weren't firing Kevin Sumlin without Jimbo being their number one target.
Well,
right?
And they already had Jimbo locked up behind closed doors because his LSU buddy was.
So that's
the
what
AD.
I'm saying. Yeah.
All right. Well, then to your
they're
point,
they're not going to fire him unless they have
to your
the
point,
next
who's
guy.
Nebraska's guy.
That's a more interesting one, right? And it has to do with, and people have pointed this out, so I'm not the first one to say this, and I don't want to claim that, but we saw last year, say with USC, right, being the advantage to being the first one, quote-unquote, in the cycle to where you can get out there. And granted, you know, like you just said with Jimbo, people will say it's like, oh, we're not having conversations, whatever, because you're technically not supposed to, but they're happening. Behind, if it's people that know people,
at least
that
with
are,
your agent,
right,
at the,
right
at
that
the
are
very
that
minimum.
Are having the discussions, then they're occurring. So I think Nebraska, if nothing else, it was a two-parter, right? You have to do that because, like, at this point, it's not getting any better. It was only going to get worse. And out of the respect for the student athletes, like, give them a chance to rally around something different because it was
is
it
Mark Whipple
out.
The interim?
No, it's I think it's the O-line coach. Or whatever. They, generally speaking, they don't like to give it to a coordinator because they already have so much else going on.
Plenty going on.
And you can
on,
give
yeah.
it to, you know, you Dabo Swinney it, and then it turns into an opportunity to for that person to kind of step up and be more of a CEO type person.
Odell Hagans.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of coordinators, Mark Whipple, not an example of this since he has been a head coach, granted at UMass, but a lot of coordinators don't have head coaching experience. So it's like, are you going to thrust them into that situation? Kind of a tough spot, whatever. But the other part for Nebraska is like, all right, now they're the first, right? Like they're the first big brand to where people can start to think like, oh, Nebraska's open. Not what if Nebraska comes open. It's now Nebraska is open and can start thinking about that in the back of their minds.
I need to look up a hot board because I really don't know who would even want that now.
I mean, it's still a good job. It's still Big Ten. They got a lot of money. They got a lot of support. It's a tough place to recruit to, but like, God dang, if those fans all pack out that dang stadium every week. I mean, for crying out loud, it's not like there's complacency in what's going on in Nebraska. They're trying and they're going to keep trying. It's not a job that's fallen on hard times out of a lack of caring. In fact, they may have cared too much. That may be part of their problem, but they're going to have some big names out there. And I mean, Alex, we saw the sitting head coach at Oklahoma leave to go to USC. We saw the sitting head coach at Notre Dame leave to go to LSU. Like anybody will leave now. Anybody.
I
except for, you know, so Saban.
USA Today has a list of five guys, Matt Campbell being one of them.
I mean, that'd be a home run for Nebraska.
I think so, too. And eventually he needs to leave
and
Iowa
Nebraska
State.
Has so
or he'll
much,
die there.
They have so much more resource-wise than
Dave
Iowa State
Doran
does.
From NC State.
No, bad. That'd be a bad hire.
For I feel like he shouldn't leave either. Chris Klieman from
that would
Kansas
be
State.
A good hire.
That's funny that they would jump in. Well,
it's a better. I mean, again, Nebraska is not in conference anymore. Big 12, Big 10. But,
Lance Leipold
yeah.
at Kansas.
Kansas, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No way Mark Stoops leaves Kentucky.
No, he's
that.
Got a lifetime contract. They're yeah. putting a statue up of him.
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
He's beaten Florida 3 of the last 5 years.
Speaking
he's
of the
competitive.
Gators.
He's fun. He recruits.
Speaking of the Gators, 1-1 now. We sat here and sang their praises a little bit on this program last week. It is.
Yeah, that was preemptive.
Why my joking overreaction. This isn't my real one. I said it off air. I'll say it on air. And those who get it will get this. And other people probably won't understand it. But I said Anthony Richardson is Chris Ricks. And that is like due to the fact that Chris Ricks, like his first game that he started of his, or it's like a second game he started of his career, he flipped into the end zone in dramatic fashion for a touchdown against UAB. And everybody was like, God, he's so dynamic. This guy's
going
to win a Heisman.
Yeah.
Like,
got
who
all
can
the
stop
tools.
Him? Yeah. And then every game after that, people just like forced him to throw from the pocket consistently and he couldn't do it. And then Anthony Richardson great game plan by Mark Stoops. They kept him in the pocket most of the night, and he looked like a guy who was not comfortable there. And again, he's got a long way to go. Hasn't played a ton of football at this level. Didn't get used much outside of a change of pace guy last year. And I think he's going to be better than he was on Saturday. He played a good defense and a well-coached defense on a ranked opponent. But it is very clear that this Florida team still has a long way to go to be good week in, week out in the SEC.
It's too early to write him off, but now you look at a couple games. We do have a sample size. Georgia last year with an all-world defense kept him in the pocket, and he couldn't do anything, and we all said, maybe Georgia's defense is that good. Now Kentucky does it. Utah, if you look at it, he didn't carve them up. He just made some highlight plays. But the tweet that I saw this weekend that I told you I wanted to read to you, I think you'll love this. Anthony Richardson is Treon Harris with muscle. And I was like, God, that's good.
Treon. Yeah. And quite a few more inches because Treon is like 5'10. Yeah.
I can't find it. I thought I liked it.
Speaking of great tweets from this weekend involving the Gators, and it just turns out as I clicked on it, this was deleted. So I'm really glad I threw it into our show document that you don't look at. So this is a surprise, but it saved it for posterity. So Emmett Smith tweeted on Sunday.
Better be good. You're already laughing.
He quote tweeted the Gators' final score tweet from the Utah game this Sunday. So they had already played and lost to Kentucky. Quote tweets the graphic that says 29-26 Gators beat, Utah. Says great win against Utah. Good work and keep the program moving forward. Hashtag go Gators. So somebody needs to obviously guide into this was after the day after Florida lost to Kentucky. So somebody obviously got in Emmett's ear and was like, hey, Emmett,
Gators are rolling.
Like sometimes I get it to where like I listen to so many podcasts that I fall behind and I'll be listening to like podcasts that are like a week old and it's like living in a time
it's
capsule.
Overreaction.
Yeah. I'm like time traveling and I'm listening. In fact, I was listening to our pals Dimes on Duval from last week. Now there was an issue with their podcast publishing on Apple Podcasts last week. So it didn't pop into my feed until like a couple of days ago. So I was listening to it on my way here and they actually had some really good takes about the Jags. I was like, all right, nice. They were talking about like what it's going to take for the Jags to win on Sunday. I was like, that kind of landed spot on all those. That's good. But how many more times do I hear things?
Fact checking that,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So many more times I've heard things. I'm just like, woof, not a good one. It's like Emmett Smith was like coming, he's like living his whole life like a week behind and he's just like scrolling through and he's like, well, look at the Gators. Look at what they managed to do.
He probably typed in Anthony Richardson Gators and saw that replay of Anthony Richardson against Utah and had to tweet it.
Hey, Google, what was the score of the Gator game? It was just very funny because obviously people were just crushing him online and he must have logged in and checked his mentions at some point and been like, oh dang, that's dumb. I got
to
delete this.
What a weekend for Florida State to have a bye.
Oh, it's
just
phenomenal.
Lay back. We came off a big win. Let's relax. We talked about this on the podcast last week. You can't screw up if you don't play.
And especially if you're undefeated.
Yeah. Right.
Cause we're not sitting there drinking our sorrows at that point, wondering about like what's going to go wrong next week. We were sitting there riding high, enjoying a week of college football craziness with upsets galore and knowing that Noles are still going to be undefeated.
Miami struggles against Southern Miss.
Yep.
Was
slow start.
10-7 at half. I mean, 10-7, Scott.
Slow start. That's what I said.
Yeah. They were struggling. So then Jimbo Fisher loses.
Yep.
And the Gators lose.
Oh, that's great.
And Notre Dame loses. I think we all hate Notre Dame.
Yeah, whatever about Notre Dame. But that's a great segue for me to bring up bring back, Sunbelt Scotty onto the program and shout out the boys from the belt.
You need a Sunbelt belt.
So the Sunbelt changed their logo a couple years ago. It's terrible now. They used to have one that was like a sunburst and it was like Sunbelt around it. And I like that one. So if anybody wants to hook a guy up with an old sun, like a circa 2015 era Sunbelt logo shirt, I will wear that. But the Sunbelt, App State upsets Texas A&M, as we talked about. Marshall, as you just mentioned, upsets the old
offense coordinator at Marshall.
Yeah.
Who is it?
Offensive coordinator Marshall. I don't know.
Clint Trickett.
How about that?
Florida State, baby.
They get an upset over Notre Dame.
Look at all these wins we have. I'm claiming all these for Florida State.
And I'm missing one, right? Georgia Southern gets one over Nebraska. And
wait, Clay Helton's at Georgia Southern?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Everyone kept talking about how he lost to Clay Helton, who lost his job at USC last year. I didn't realize he was at Georgia Southern.
Yeah. What a move. And obviously, it's looking like a pretty good hire here so far, finding a way to win that one. But I just need to point out, for the Sun Belt, here's a stat for you. They are the first league, group of five, quote-unquote league, with multiple wins over top 10 opponents in a week since 2003. And I'm forgetting, help me here, who was the other who's the other top 10 team that lost to
this week?
Yeah. It's already been, it's been 3 days and I've forgotten everything. All right, I'm going to pull it up. But while I'm doing that, can you guess what the last league was that accomplished that fate, that accomplishment, I should say?
And it can be any league.
Yep. Any a group of five leagues. Yep.
I would just be throwing a random dart at the wall.
So I'm not, yeah, just guess a league that isn't, you know, the ACC, SEC, whatever. I think I had the stat wrong. I think it's top 25 wins. But
top
anyway.
25. I mean, so outside of the Sun Belt, who's got a good
this was 2003.
In 03. Is Mountain West, Utah, BYU. What were they in?
Yeah, Mountain West.
Yeah.
But not them.
Okay.
I'm beginning, I'm beginning to doubt this stat a little bit here because I'm like scrolling through and I...
Oh, don't say that.
And I can't find who the third team was that won this past week. Like, who was the last ranked team to lose to a... Or maybe it was just... It must have just been wins over like taking down three Power 5 opponents or something like that. And I must have just copied it down wrong. But
the... Well, I don't know who it is. I got
here nothing. We go. It's the MAC.
Who in the MAC would have done that?
So September 20th, 2003, the MAC had Marshall.
Okay, with Byron Leftwich.
Beat number 6 Kansas
Miami
State.
Miami of Ohio.
Miami, Ohio did not do it that week.
Okay.
But a good guess. Toledo beat number 9 Pittsburgh.
Who is then? Gradkowski?
Yeah, I think it might have been Gradkowski. That's a good call. Yeah, Bruce Gradkowski. Nice pull. And then Northern
There's
Illinois.
A name for you.
Yeah, beat number 21 Alabama.
Really? Yep. NIU was doing stuff back then?
Yeah.
I don't remember NIU when we were little.
NIU. Yeah. I don't really remember much about them either. But
I don't remember them.
That may have been a one-off.
Existing until Jordan Lynch.
I remember they had Derek Wolfe. You remember that running back? He was an NIU guy.
Derek Wolfe. I thought that was a defense tackle from there.
No, I think he was a running back.
Yeah.
They had a really good running back one year that I think led the country in rushing. But anyway... I think I butchered that stat a little bit there, but interestingly enough,
it's fun to,
yeah. I mean,
fun to say random names,
but at the same time, like there are some, like Georgia State's a quality program. Louisiana's still good. Like the Sun Belt, and we're in a situation where group of five, when you think about group of five leagues, you think about the AAC immediately and stuff like that. But I think we're in a spot here. Nice. TJ Watt. I'll be back. With the Terminator meme, which he will be. I'm sure he'll heal absurdly fast somehow. But the, like, we're to a point where the Sun Belt, especially with what they've added in the last couple of years and all, like, they've, it's a really good league and it's fun. And guess what? Guess where College Game Day is going this week? Boone, North Carolina.
Who's App State playing?
App State has,
I just had the slate pulled up.
They're not going to be ranked, so I'm looking at the wrong thing here. But
well, anyway, you're
anyway,
right. they do have the buzz going there. And App State just put up what, 63 against North Carolina the other day.
Yep. So I mean, all I'm saying is put some respect on the name. Put some spec on the Sun Belt.
Troy.
Name.
They got Troy coming into town.
The Troy Trojans
traveling up to the mountains of Boone, North Carolina.
Have you been to Boone?
I have not.
Beautiful. Put it on the list, man. Do you like mountains?
Yeah, I love mountains. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's a great town. It's a great college town. It's actually very pretty. It's got a cool downtown with shops and restaurants and stuff.
Luke Combs went there.
It's nice. I mean, it's actually a good spot for the kids because they got this little, they got an amusement park nearby called Tweetsie Railroad. It's got a bunch of great stuff for kids to do. So, you know, maybe one day when camp gets a little bit older and you guys go on a little vacay up in the mountains, I would say in the fall, but it's tough during football season.
Maybe I go to a game.
Yeah. I would love to. Yeah, I got a buddy of mine who worked at JU with me and was on the basketball. He was a basketball GA, and then he got a job at Presbyterian as the ops guy. And then Presbyterian's head coach won enough there to where he got the App State job. So he took it with him. So he's been there the last couple of years, been to an NCAA tournament. That'd be a great, great area to live, especially young. I don't know. Or like older. Like, I don't know if I want to live there.
Either young or old.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to like raise a family in Boone, yeah. But it'd be great to like retire there or be there when I was like young and single. Probably good. But yeah, very pretty. Very pretty. I'm excited to see game day there.
It's got Asheville vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Would pick your Sun Belt team to pull for the rest of the year. Who are you going with?
I'm going to go with Marshall, the Clint Trickett connection, yeah, and then Kalon Laybourne. Or LeBourne.
Yeah, LeBourne. He's balling out for them at running back.
Tearing it up at running back. Five-star transfer from FSU.
He had
got booted from the team.
He had a moment or two in Garnet and Gold.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's got some. If you just pull him up on YouTube, one of the first things you'll see is him against Virginia Tech. And then he broke his leg maybe two plays later.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Bummer. All right. I'm gonna ride App the rest of the year. Charlotte was my darling going into the season, but they're actually kind of
they're terrible.
They're ass.
I bet on them week one and that was a huge mistake.
They are 19 point dogs against Georgia State this week, so should tell you a lot. Georgia State is decent, that is for sure. We'll be following along. Sun Belt Scotty will make appearances routinely on this program throughout the course of the season, and we'll be checking in with Alex's Marshall Thundering Herd and my App State Mountaineers, who are hosting game day this week. All right, overreaction time. Your overreaction here. Week two, we'll refresh the folks who may have forgotten. Week one, I said Pac-12 doesn't get a team in the playoff for the sixth straight year. Alex said that Stetson Bennett would be in New York for the Heisman ceremony at the end of the season, the Georgia QB. What do you got this week?
Again, it's an overreaction, but after watching Bama this week, it's hard for me to imagine they make it. I mean, the playoffs are the playoffs, but it's hard for me to imagine they make it to the national title. They're loaded as anyone. They have Bryce Young still, so they could turn things around. But the fact that they have that in them, they just don't look like they're the team this year. They're not it.
Yeah, it is fascinating because it felt like after week one, they stomped Utah State 45-0. And then we learned the very next week that Utah State is awful because they got crushed by Weber State. So it shows how you can't view too much out of one week at a time. But yeah, that was a very different week one to week two. And some of the issues that plagued Alabama last year plagued them a little bit against Texas. Like the offensive line was shaky. The receivers maybe weren't as good.
Which I can't understand how it's possible because they recruit so well. It's like, how are you bad at O-line?
And maybe it's just something where they're going to have to gel over the course of the year, right? I talked about that earlier in the reference to the
But it happened NFL last
stuff.
Year, too. Yeah, I mean, you don't.
Yep. It's true.
It's two straight years. Ever since Mario Cristobal left, it feels like the O-line hadn't been the same.
Well, maybe it's one of those deals like the Death Star's got to have a hole, right? And for years it was kicker, and it seems like they have a pretty good kicker now, finally. No coincidence he's wearing number 16 as a kicker. That's an automatic dub right there.
That's through the upright. That's a split the middle every time.
Pure. But now maybe it's that O-line, which if it doesn't get better, Bryce Young isn't a particularly thick individual. Now, he is shifty. Boy, that sack he avoided in the final drive.
single-handedly won the game.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads it's a perfect segue into my overreaction. Bryce Young becomes the first guy since Archie Griffin to repeat as Heisman winner.
Wow. I mean, I feel like we're two polar opposites of what we saw. Is he going to have enough yards thrown?
I think he's just going to be, it's going to be that eye test that comes from being a QB that is already on people's radars and does some heroics. Like, his numbers weren't phenomenal against Texas, but people are going to remember that last drive. And they're going to remember that he is the reason they won that game.
Yeah, that will be the highlight playing while he's walking up to the podium. 100%.
Like, him shrugging off that sack and completing the pass down that sideline. And he's going to have plenty of opportunities for other moments like that. He'll have opportunities to blow some teams out and put up fancy, nasty numbers to help inflate everything across the board, too. But, I mean, seriously speaking, outside of Stetson Bennett last week, like, who is anybody else? Not that we track this the same way that we used to, Heisman-wise, but, like, has anybody else made a statement in your mind?
I mean, no. Stroud hasn't particularly balled out. It'll be interesting to see. Dark horse name, Sam Hartman. Be interesting to see what he does now that he's back.
And he's a story.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. I know it sounds very insensitive because I know blood clots are a big issue, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, great to see him healthy and back and able to play and play well. I mean,
I wish he was healthy and back after our game.
Selfishly,
I wish he got 100% recovered the Sunday night after we played, after we kicked their ass. But no, Sam Hartman, ESPN would love to just play a harp in the background. While
get ready, because Gene Wojciechowski's going to have one of those on game day.
Sad violin in the background.
Well, Tom Rinaldi's gone, so somebody's had to pick up the throne there. And Wojciechowski, you know, he's a writer by trade.
Yep.
He'll be doing a feature on Sam Hartman by the end of the month, I would say. He's a pretty good bet.
And the prognosis, blood clots. Yeah, it's going to be good.
One morning in early August 2022, the news broke out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Sam Hartman, their talented quarterback, who was on many big boards across the NFL landscape, was out indefinitely with what the world was left to wonder.
Oh, my God.
You like that?
Have you practiced that?
No, that was straight off the top of my head.
All right. Is there a way we can make sure this is... Yeah, but can we make sure this is copyrighted? Because he's going to borrow that.
Hey, Gene, would you like me to write your open for you? Here you go. That's a guy who's done a TV hit or two in my life.
That was good then.
I have to write that stuff for a while now.
Yeah, but it's so predictable.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's formulaic.
They love the sad stuff. They love it.
Yeah. By the way, did you watch Game Day this past week?
Nope.
I just wanted to know if you had any thoughts. Doing. Pat McAfee was back on there. I said it to somebody last week. I think he's I think he's the replacement for Lee Corso when Lee Corso steps down. He's not going to be like the headgear guy or whatever, but I think he's, they shouldn't have anybody do that. It'll never be the same. They'll have to find a new shtick. Like, that's what you got to do. But he is the foil, the comedic foil to everybody with energy and craziness and the ability to steal the show type thing that I think that, you know, they're looking for in the wake of, you know, really kind of looking for since Lee got sick a couple of years ago and had a stroke, but especially once he steps away from it, they'll need that person on the desk. And I think he's just a logical pick.
I haven't watched it yet. I don't know what I've been doing on Saturday mornings, but
I mean, you have two kids, so I'm assuming.
Yeah.
From what I've heard from people that have kids that are football people,
I mean, we had T-ball.
They don't watch game day because like they're using those hours to build up equity later.
Oh, that's all I do.
Yeah.
My whole life is equity. I'm just building equity.
Every time you've drank a beer with me
since I've had kids or gotten wings with me, I slaved for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you don't know the work I've put in for those moments.
Oh, trust me, I don't know firsthand, but I'm aware of the concept of having to trade things off. I mean, it's not the same.
Yeah, you missed this Saturday.
Yeah, it's not the same being in a relationship as having kids, but there is some of that that is also built in where if you want to be in a either happily married or happily in a relationship, sometimes you have to sit there and say, honey, do you want to watch football with me on the couch as opposed to me leaving to go to the bar to watch football with my
friends? The football is not up for debate. Yeah, that needs to be understood.
Yes. And, you know, she was a pretty good sport and she was just happy that I was sitting there with her. So. It worked
out.
So
you won. Win-win.
Yeah. It's a dub all the way around. All right. Well, I think we've hit about everything here. Man, what a show. Action-packed, start to finish. And, yeah, I'm checking my notes. That's all I got. I guess
we did everything we could.
Oh, your Turco trifecta. There we go. Yeah, you probably see this is strategic. This is strategic. You didn't want me to remember this. So yeah,
well,
so
I don't have anything ready for you today.
You went 1-2 again last week. You lost your lock of the week. And for those to be reminded, yes, you tweeted it out, but you missed the Michigan covering against Hawaii by one whole point, which a lot of people miss that one by 1 point. So you shouldn't feel too bad about it.
Doesn't,
I guess, but it's
yeah,
still
it's nice. Misery sure does love company, but it didn't make me feel better. I mean, talking about a bullshit loss, I need 67 points and we get 66.
Ah, brutal, brutal. Alabama obviously did not cover the 19 and a half against Texas. And then
they sure didn't.
You did get Iowa State, who were +3.5 against Iowa, won the game outright. Good
didn't
for Matt Campbell. Finally wins the Cy-Haw.
I think I said it to you via text. I was like, I just feel really good about that one.
Yeah.
Like, why is this a 3-point spread in any direction?
Well, and I said it back to you. I said, well, Iowa can't score any points, which guess what? Iowa didn't score any points.
No, they didn't.
that held true. And then your lock of the week, Saints, -5.5 at the Falcons. The Saints decided not to show up till the second half. So they needed a miracle field goal to win that game. Field goals aren't worth 5, only 3. So
that's how that works.
That's how that works. So a tough, not an awful week, but not the week you were looking for.
So here's two things we need to see.
Give me one little teaser or maybe two for the weekend. Don't forget, you can see the Turco Trifecta posted online on Thursdays at sportsbar_pod on Twitter.
God, so Nevada stinks that bad. My new thing is I'm going to look at Iowa each week and see what the over-under set at.
What did they set it at? 41?
And now it's at 39. It moved.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm sure the people were hammering that under. Yeah.
They must be. Yeah, so, I mean, Nevada has beaten Texas State and New Mexico State.
Two of the worst teams in college football.
Yeah. I mean, fair. Yeah. But is Iowa going to put up? All right. Well, let me
I mean,
ask
Nevada
you
was good last year. So, I don't know how many
Iowa's
of those players
by
are back.
23.
I'll take Nevada to cover that.
Yeah,
Iowa can't score 23 points, but much as beat a team by 23.
I'll see. I'll make sure we get it tweeted out. Interesting. We have Auburn, Penn State. That's fun. Miami, Texas A&M. That's fun.
Speaking of that, a quick uniform note here to end things on. Florida State Seminoles, who have, we haven't even mentioned much about them, playing Louisville this weekend. Coin flip game, in my opinion, by the way. But they'll be in the icy whites, all whites. First time an all-white helmet for Florida State, too, to go with the white jerseys. Auburn's going all orange against Penn State. Orange jerseys, yes.
Does it look terrible?
I don't know.
I can't imagine that looks good with an orange helmet.
It's going to be – it's one of those deals where I think you got to see what it looks like in action.
Also, we need to see, does Hawaii have a bye week? Because I'm going to blindly bet the over in every game they play. Their defense is so bad.
Yeah. They're – our boy Timmy – it's a long year on the island.
Oh, he's hurting.
If there's one spot, though, right, to have a long year, like you leave work, you're like, I just can't seem to figure out what we're going to do to slow down X team this week.
Is this weekend the 18th?
Yes.
Duquesne plays.
Oh, how about that?
Unbelievable. So,
but to finish my point, like if you're the head coach of Hawaii and your team sucks, but you still get to go home at night and live in Hawaii, right? Like, and you're Timmy Chang. You're a freaking legend. And like, you're not buying
Well, that's
a beer.
What we said about Todd Grantham, why he went there. He was like,
yeah, it was
retirement
a
spot.
But Timmy Chang can like leave the office and go to the local establishment and somebody's picking up his tab every night. He's Timmy Chang. He set the record for all-time passing in Hawaii history. I mean, it doesn't matter how bad they lose on Saturdays. I mean,
so with us having run through everything we wanted to, let's do a quick FSU.
Yeah.
Just a quick hitter. Since we owe it to our listeners. We are Florida State guys. Malik Cunningham, elite athlete. That's Louisville's starting quarterback. He's been there for 18 years now, I believe. But
feels like it.
He's got as many touchdowns as anyone in that program over Brian Brohm, almost as many as Lamar Jackson. I watched them to scout the opponent last Friday against UCF. They cannot stop the run. Side note, don't know why Gus Malzahn and UCF stopped running the ball because they were churning out yards like crazy. That's a whole nother discussion about how Gus isn't a good coach. But Florida State is a good running team and a good running offense and has created angles and has an O-line that's improved and has three running backs that are capable. I'm very interested to see what they do after LSU kind of shut us down. against this Louisville defense that didn't look good against UCF, despite only giving up, what, 13, 14 points?
Yeah.
I mean, the scoreboard doesn't show how many yards were churned out. Those drives for both teams actually just kept stalling out. They'd move, 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 stall out. So I'm very interested to see what they do. Louisville doesn't scare me at all, and that scares me.
Oh, I was about to say.
Like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I'm scared that I'm not scared of them. Why am I confident? I am,
though. I don't know if I feel better or worse. I think I feel a little better that Louisville won the game.
Oh, so I feel not, so much relief.
Right, that they're not coming in on that, like, desperation.
0-2.
0-2, throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks type atmosphere. Like, they're going to treat this a little more normal. I think that helps. Your scouting report is, you know, that's good to me. I didn't watch the Louisville-UCF game. I was working on Friday night, so I didn't see it. But all I saw was the score. And I was like, all right, nice. Okay, Louisville won, whatever. And I love to hear that you were describing a situation in which Florida State can hopefully get back to not recreating what they did against Duquesne. That seems impossible. But to get back to kind of the basics of running the football after they were really kind of stonewalled for much of the game against LSU. And if they can just sort of get out to that ground and pound and complement with some choice throws here and there and all, I really like our chances. The defense is going to be the question.
And that's what we need to watch, though, is Jordan Travis. Does he look like he did against LSU, where he's calm and collected in the pocket?
He's who I'm least concerned about, I feel.
Oh, yeah. But I don't want that to be an outlier, is my point.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
You had a bye week. You're rested up. You're healthy for the first time in forever. Come out and do exactly what you did. Pick up right where you left off. I'm very interested to see that. And then our defense. This is a huge game for our linebackers because Malik Cunningham is so dynamic. But we'll see. We get it Friday night, not Saturday.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. Primetime game.
Oh, yeah.
In Louisville. And that's the problem. Primetime game in Louisville. That's the only reservation I have about this game. And I hope this doesn't come back to bite me. But Scott, I think we're 10 to 17 points better than Louisville. The kicker here is it's in Louisville.
It's a snake pit type atmosphere.
If we played them at home, I'd feel very confident.
Think NC State on a Thursday. Think Boston College on a Friday. Think what the Noles are walking into this coming Friday. These are the type of games that the opposing team gets so amped up for. I seem to recall a Louisville matchup in which Florida State fell behind by a couple of touchdowns before Dalvin Cook single-handedly brought him back. Almost 10 years ago now. And I just don't want to see this team get in that situation. Get out early, take care of business, and get a win. And
they should, and they could. Yeah. So it's a big game. Talk about the momentum that the program will have if they're 3-0 coming back home with a host Boston College.
With another situation where you're going to have like the country's eyeballs on you type deal too. I mean, not quite as many as you had in that LSU Sunday night primetime one, but it's a standalone.
Man. Go mess around and accidentally be 3-0. Let's go do it.
Sounds good to me.
Let's do
it. I hope we're cracking beers, toasting that on this show this time next week, Alex. And why don't we sign off with a special name? I'm gonna go with a Florida State Louisville reverse curse name here to hopefully get all the bad juju out right now. Speaking of bad Florida State LSU moment, Louisville moments, excuse me, Dave Ragone.
QB?
In the Hurricane.
Yeah, that's right.
0-2?
Yep, 0-2.
Lefty.
Man, that was a terrible game.
Terrible.
Yeah, I remember him. Oh, my. That's terrible. I can't even follow that up. You've scarred me. Another running back I wanted to highlight for them was, do you remember their big running back, number 19,
Michael
Bush?
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah. Great way to end it. Great way to end it. We hope that you all enjoyed this episode. We look forward to getting back on this couch and bringing you more. Give us a follow on Twitter at sportsbar_pod. Don't forget, Turco Trifecta drops there on Thursdays. Use sportsbar15 code at checkout to get 15% off your Ice Mule coolers. Proud sponsors of the pod. For Alex, I'm Scott. This has been another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.